Hey, Chavra, thank you very much for coming out to learn some Torah with us, and I just want to thank Rabbi Reis Shlita for being here and sharing his Divrei Torah, Divrei Chizik, Divrei Musar, and we look forward to hearing it this evening.
Okay. Thank you, Rabbi Leibowitz. It's a great kavod to be here again. Certainly the Ibn Ezra is considered one of the most beloved commentaries on the Torah. He has the special zechus of making it in to the Mikros Gedolos, and the Ibn Ezra has learned in every base medrash. Here, at the same time, I think anybody who's learned a little bit of Chumash knows that the Ibn Ezra is probably one of the more confounding, one of the more difficult perushim on Chumash as well. Very interesting opinions, things that are off the beaten track, and we often struggle to take the opinion of the Ibn Ezra and to align it with what we think the Torah should say or what we're told the Torah should say. And we have a most confusing comment of the Ibn Ezra at the very end of this week's Parsha and Parshas Mishpatim. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Shemayim to hear essentially the greatest shir ever given, HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe, a Chavrusa, a shir, an incredible moment in the history of Torah. And the Torah tells us he would be there for 40 days and 40 nights. Vayaba Moshe besocha adon vayala lahar vayi Moshe bahar arbim yom v'arbim lail. He was there for 40 days and 40 nights. Comes the Ibn Ezra. And the Ibn Ezra notes that there's actually more information about Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai that could be found in the beginning of Devarim. In the beginning of Devarim, we are told by Moshe describing his own stay in the hotel of Har Sinai, Lechem lo achalti umayim lo shasisi. I did not eat any bread, I did not consume any water. A tzarachian, not our point for right now, but it is a tzarachian of Ibn Ezra because the Torah itself tells us this in Parshas Kisisa. So it's unclear why Ibn Ezra has to go pull from Devarim about not eating bread and drinking water. We know that already in Parshas Kisisa. But nevertheless, this is what Ibn Ezra says to tell us more information about what happened in that amazing shir that Moshe did not eat and Moshe did not drink. The Ibn Ezra then writes something that is astounding. And the Ibn Ezra says, "Bezeh pela gadol." This is amazing. Lonia kamohu lefanu. There was nothing like this ever before. That a person did not eat for 40 days and drink for 40 days. That is incredible, says the Ibn Ezra. A pela gadol that Moshe was on Har Sinai for this amount of time. Seemingly that's the simplest reading of the Ibn Ezra. This amazing event, a pela gadol that Moshe was on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. And this is incredibly bewildering. The Ibn Ezra is so confused that Moshe couldn't eat for 40 days and 40 nights, didn't drink water for all this time. This is such a tzarachian. Comes Rav Yosef Ibn Kaspi, one of the earliest commentaries in Ibn Ezra. He writes in his Mishnah Kesef, come on, Ibn Ezra, you learn Chumash as well. Hashem split a sea. Food fell from the sky. This that Moshe didn't eat for 40 days, that was a pela gadol. That was the most incredible thing we can know, that Moshe was on Har Sinai for 40 days. What is so confusing about that? That Moshe was in Har Sinai for an extended amount of time. What is this Pella? Even Ezra learned Chumash like we did. You ask any kid, top five miracles in the Torah. No man, splitting of the sea, slav, all types of incredible things. Nobody would ever think to them, that's an incredible thing. That Moshe was on Har Sinai for that amount of time. So I want to offer, with your indulgence, I want to offer two different approaches to understand the Pella Gadol, this amazing, amazing event that took place in Har Sinai. They're different, but I think they all lean towards a similar theme and a similar approach that we can hopefully gain from together in our Avodas Hashem. The first approach to explain the Pella, the wonder of Har Sinai, to understand Ibn Ezra, is to begin with the following assumption. And that is, for these 40 days, Moshe was on a level and he had the characteristics of a Malach Hashem. He was an otherworldly being. He was above what any human being could have totally expected to achieve, to accomplish, and to attain in their life. And only a being that was so completely godly and above time and space, physical needs, biological, things like that, were able to conduct themselves in such a manner. So there is a beautiful Mipi HaShmua from Rav Chaim Kreisworth, brought by Rabbi Isaac Bernstein in his classic tapes. I'm just going to note this for a second. You will find this brought in a different sefer. There's a different sefer, an author, who we're going to keep it, this is being recorded, right? We're going to keep this nameless because the author is very much alive and he's known for his particular svarim. But this author not infrequently plagiarizes from Rabbi Isaac Bernstein and says that ideas that are his are in fact not his. They come from the tapes of Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, and he does not quote him once the entire set of svarim. So this is one of the places that he quotes it, and he says that he heard it from Rabbi Kreisworth. It's not true. He heard it on a tape from Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, who heard it from Rabbi Chaim Kreisworth. So let me tell you what Rabbi Kreisworth said. What he said was is that on this earth there is a klal gadol, and the rule is that you cannot live for 40 days and 40 nights without eating and drinking. It's not possible. A klal gadol, that is the rule. Therefore, Moshe was not living on this earth. He was living in Shemayim. He was in an otherworldly place, above time and space. The Medrash says in Vezosa Bracha that Moshe wanted to stay for an extra day, or an hour, or as an animal, or as a bird, that he could continue to take advantage of the spiritual opportunities of this world. Moshe Rabbeinu loved being in this world, flesh and blood, walking around, seeing people, talking with people, engaging with people, eating, drinking, whatever needed to be done to live. Moshe loved Olam Hazeh. He took advantage of every single moment. And he wanted to be here as long as he could in order to get the most and to squeeze the most out of this world. Nevertheless, Hashem denied his request and said, Moshe, it's your time. It's time to come up for your neshika, your last kiss, and for your nesham to leave this world. The same Moshe Rabbeinu, who valued every second in this world, was willing to give up 40 days in Olam Hazeh in order to bring the Torah to Klal Yisrael. This was the Mesiras Nefesh, says Rabbi Kreisworth. This is the Pela Gadol. The great Pella that Ibn Ezra was talking about was that for 40 days, Moshe Rabbeinu gave up Olam Hazeh, all the beauty and the pleasure and the opportunity of this world. He was Moser Nefesh and gave up those 40 days in order to bring the Torah to Klal Yisrael. Moshe is described in Dvarim as an Ish Elokim. Comes the Medrash and asks, what's an Ish Elokim? What's an Ish, a man who's also like Elokim? So Rav Avin says that Moshe was physically a human being, but spiritually he was a malach. He was a mixture of both. He was half human, half angel. This was part of the Pella of Moshe Rabbeinu, that he was in this world, but also in another world. And that combination, as the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch, umafli lasos, as we say in Rosh Yatzar, to have a combination of ruchnius and gashmius in one being, Moshe Rabbeinu was that, but to an infinite amount more. To have a total combination of spirituality and be totally grounded in this world as well. We have other people who are referred to as malachim who reach amazing states and amazing heights. We know Eliyahu HaNavi is often called Eliyahu HaNavi Malach HaBris. We know that he is an malach in the sense that he can appear at any point at any time to appear at all the bris milos that are in the world, but at the same time he can appear in this world in human form. But we don't call him an Ish Elokim. We know the famous story of the Gemara in Ksubis, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi wanted to know what was going to happen when he died, and the Malach HaMavis took him to Gan Eden, and he gave him a little boost up on his leg so he can see over where his chelik was going to be. And Yehoshua ben Levi is a bit of a character, and he jumped into Gan Eden, and he escaped the Malach HaMavis, and he lived forever, able to live forever in Gan Eden. We don't call him Ish Elokim. What's the reason why? Why is Moshe Rabbeinu Ish Elokim? And the answer is because Moshe Rabbeinu was an Ish, and Elohim at the same time. He was able to live in this world, but also have his head in such lofty places, and to be normal, and to relate to people, and to coexist, and to be friendly, and to inspire, and to relate, and to be part around the people as well. The Maharal writes that Moshe Rabbeinu had to marry Tzipora, somebody outside the Jewish people, somebody who came in from the outside, because the neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu could relate to every single Jew. It was a chelik of every single Jew already inside the neshama Moshe Rabbeinu. And the only person that could be an Ezer Kenegdo, that he already wouldn't be like marrying himself, would be marrying Tzipora outside the Jewish people. Because Moshe Rabbeinu could relate to every Jew where they were. He was so lofty and so incredible, but he was also so normal and relatable to every person around him as well. And that is a key difference. The Tshuvas Chassam Sofer discusses the status of Eliyahu HaNavi as a person, and he says that when it comes to counting Eliyahu for a minion, it depends on which form he comes in. Is Eliyahu HaNavi going to be a malach? Is it going to be an ish? But Moshe Rabbeinu was both. There was no having to decide or compromise. Moshe Rabbeinu was both together. And I think lesson number one from Rabbi Kreisworth, as we see, is that it's important to be ish Elokim, to have she'ifas to grow, to inspire, and to reach for more, but at the same time, to be normal and to relate to people, and that shouldn't overcome who you are as a human being, even though you may have she'ifas and desires to grow great and to accomplish great things. But even more so, perhaps even more importantly, that the people that we turn to for Eitzah, the people we turn to as our Gedolim, our Rebbeim, should be people who are relatable to us, who understand us, who are Ish Elokim. When you're looking for a Rebbe, you're looking for inspiration, you're looking for somebody to learn from, Ish Elokim, a Pella. To have total ruchnius, enraptured and encased in gashmius, to be able to understand where you're coming from, your background, who you are, where you're going, your family, what's important to you, but at the same time, be able to guide you and propel you in the right direction as well, towards Elokim. That is point number one. And the second approach to understand the Pella of Ibn Ezra is a comment from the current Rebbe of Biala in his Sefer Mevasar Tov. And he cites the first Rebbe of Biala, the Divrei Bina, who explains that Moshe Rabbeinu is an Ish Elokim. He existed in the heavens and in this world at the same time. He was so close to Hashem, and yet he was grounded with his people. And says the Rebbe of Biala, the Pella of Ibn Ezra is to be so exalted, but humble at the same time. That's what the Ibn Ezra couldn't understand. How could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu was, at the greatest extent of what a human can accomplish, to be sitting in Har Sinai for those 40 days and still be Anaf Mikol Adam? How does that exist in the same person? To be so exalted and so high up, to accomplish so much, and to be so humble at the same time. The Ibn Ezra can't wrap his head around how it's possible for a person to be like that, to accomplish so much, and to also be so humble at the same time. Moshe Rabbeinu reached incredible levels during those 40 days. He saw and learned things that no human being will ever comprehend, ever. Yet he never felt a sense of haughtiness. He never felt that he was better than anyone else in Klal Yisrael. In fact, it was just the opposite. By seeing a deeper and further aspect of becoming closer to Hashem, it made him realize how small he was in the greatness of the Bar Yolam. The more he learned about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the more Torah he learned, the more Dapim of Gemara he covered, the more Shnayim Mikra he did, he realized how incredible Hashem was and how small he was compared to the rest of the world. When the world has you by the neck and things are difficult, it's very easy to be an anav. When you have a terrible day and nothing goes right at the office and nothing goes right at the home, it's very, very easy to be an anav. It's, ah, oh, mamish, I'm so humble, I'm nothing. Mamish, like, what can I accomplish? That's not so chashiv to be an anav when nothing's going right for you. It makes sense that you'd feel that way. You'd already naturally depressed and low. But the Pella, which is more impressive, is to have a sense of anivus when you're riding high and you're in seventh heaven. When everything is great at the office that day, and you said the right thing to your spouse, and the learning was great, and to walk into your house and say, but what am I really? What am I in the eyes of Hashem? What am I in the rest of the eyes of humanity? That's a Pella Gadol. This is the Anava of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Anava the Ibn Ezra is referring to. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't eat for 40 days, and he comes down from Har Sinai as the most humble servant. He could walk to his house and say, excuse me, I did not eat a drop of food for 40 days. Please do not tell me what to do, because I am awesome. No. He comes after that experience and says, that was incredible. I have so much more to accomplish, to learn, to know about the human experience. We often make the mistake of the image of someone who's truly humble as a sniveling, weak schlemiel who's always apologizing for no reason. I'm so sorry, no, of course, it's not you, it's me. No, no, I'm sorry, please, please, excuse me. That's not anivus. Anivus does not come from a person or a place where a person has no self-respect for who he is and what he has accomplished as well. One of the first steps in anava is to recognize your value and your assets. You can be assured that Moshe Rabbeinu knew that he was something special. It would be wrong to say that Moshe Rabbeinu does not realize what he accomplished, what he did. And yet he was Anav Mikol Adam. We all know the famous story. Rav Chaskel Abramsky was called into a court in London in order to testify about aspects of Shechita. There was a controversial decision about the Shechita in London. He went to a court, and they called him over, and they were deposing him and introducing him as the expert witness. And they brought up a whole discussion. Rabbi Abramsky, are you not, you know, the foremost expert on Jewish law in all of England? Can you state your credentials? And he said, yes, I am. So the judge interrupted the proceedings and said, excuse me, Rabbi, doesn't it say in your Torah, in your law, you have to be humble? So Rabbi Chaskel Abramsky said, you're right, that's true, but it also says you're not allowed to lie. And therefore, I have to state the facts. I know what I've accomplished, I know what I am, and at the same time, I can be humble about it and know who I am and where I come from and where I'm going because I am under oath. You know, parenting can be a very humbling experience, but not when you expect it to be. Parenting is a humble experience for most people when your children aren't listening to you and you feel like you're talking to a wall. That's not really humbling. That's just annoying, and that's stressful. That's not humbling. Rather, when you parent well and you say that right thing to your kid, right? You don't have to scream. You don't have to raise your voice. And you just said that perfect line. You really clarified everything. You told them exactly what they needed to hear. They're so proud of you. You really just hit a home run that day. Then at that moment, when you were just thought you should have received in the mail the honoree for Parent of the Year, that's when you have anava. That's when you say, wow, parenting is a difficult thing. And I was zocha to have a small window of lightning, of clarity to do the right thing and being mechanech my child. Then, right then and there, when you have that sense of being on Har Sinai, That's when you need to have anava. That's when you need to develop a sense of humility and to show where you are in the sense of the world and in the place of the rest of humanity. Exalted moments should be a time when we're humble. That's the idea. When we're on our Har Sinai, whatever that may be, that's when we need to have and work on our sense of anava. When you say and do the wrong thing to a spouse, it's not humbling, it stinks, right? When you did the wrong thing at home and you're shalom bias, that's not humbling. That just means your day is ruined and nothing's going right. But when you say the right thing to your spouse and you act as a good husband and you show that you are the person you're supposed to be and you feel amazing, that's when you grasp onto anava and say, ah, having a relationship, building shalom bias, it's difficult, it requires effort. There I need to work on myself and my humility and to develop who I am as a better human being. It goes for all forms of Avodas Hashem. When you come late to Minyan or you avoid learning Torah, you don't feel humbled, you feel distant from Hashem. When you come to shul, come on time to shul, or you attend a shir and you feel fantastic, sometimes you feel like, I'm doing Hashem a favor. Oh God, oh, you should be thanking me. I came to do the daf this morning. Hashem, you owe me, I'm incredible. No. When you're riding high and you're doing the right thing and your avodas Hashem is clicking, that's when you develop anava and have a general and a positive perspective, a healthy perspective of where you are in the world and how you are in the rest of humanity so you can grow. Don't tell me after you go and meet a Rav Asher Weiss or a Chaim Kanievsky or Rabbi Schachter that you were so humbled in their presence. I know you're humbled in their presence. You don't know anything compared to them. That obviously you're going to be, that's not a sense of humility that we care about. But when you go and you meet your friend on the street and you come in from the office and you daven with your fellow mispalim and shul and you learn about what they do in their jobs and how they conduct their homes and you're relating to the people around who are not so much naturally greater than you, that's where you need humility. You don't need to have hanava next to Rav Asher Weiss. Big Asher Koach for that. We know that you're humble compared to Gadol Yisrael. We need to develop anava next to the people sitting around you, to the people on your right and your left, and to look at them and say, wow, look what he's accomplished in his life. He's such a kind person. He's so extraordinary in this area. The people who I consider to be my peers, that's where we develop a sense of humility and anava, to understand that they have qualities and accomplishments about them that may be greater than me, and I can learn from them, and not necessarily they have to learn from me as well. The Gemara in Megillah says, wherever you find the greatness of Hashem, you'll find his humility. In every place where you find greatness is where you're supposed to find humility. When you accomplish and you grow, that's where we find the combination of a pella, of being in the Har Sinai, but also being anav mikol adam. The Chovos HaLevavos writes in the Shar Achnia that real humility comes after one has achieved loftiness of spirit, has arisen above the lowly habits of animals, and has become elevated above the character traits of lowly people. Through wisdom and nobility and a clear knowledge of one's various good and bad character traits, when additional to all this, one is able to become humble, this is a noble trait. There is no great shakes in being humble when you don't have anything going for you. To develop humility when things are going well and you have everything, everything seems to be perfect, that's where the avodah of humility is, and that is the pella of Moshe Rabbeinu. In our world and society, where apparently the people who are the loudest and scream the most and get the most attention are those people who are put on a pedestal, it only highlights the bewilderment of Ibn Ezra. It is rare to find someone like a Moshe Rabbeinu who can reach great heights of a malach and who doesn't need to eat, but at the same time can relate to every single person and see what makes that person special and what I can learn from them. That's the pella gadol of Moshe Rabbeinu. He writes on it should be the will of Hashem that we remain humble, we are on top, and that each and every one of us develop into an Isha Elokim. Thank you. Thank you.